We've interrupted our news bulletin. We're going to go on live in Beirut and listen to the Hezbollah Secretary General, Seyed Hassan Nasrallah.
141 Israeli generals and soldiers were killed and 10 went missing. Now, were the missing, were they found or not? We don't know. Israel entered into a state of general mourning, and it was the biggest martyrdom operation in the Arab-Israeli conflict. And every year, I stress on this meaning, because there should be a test, competition, regarding what is more important, what is better. However, up until today, after 33 years have passed, the martyrdom operation carried out by Ahmad Qasir is the biggest martyrdom operation in the history of the conflict and the history of resistance. Ahmad opened the ground for the great martyrs. Many other martyrs followed his path, and he indeed deserved the label of the prince of the martyrdom fighters. The Amir, the prince, is the one who is leading, who sacrifices with them, who put up with their sufferings, who feels their pains, who carries their hopes. And so hence he is indeed the prince of the martyrs. Hezbollah designated this day, the 11th of the 11th of every year, as the day of the martyrs of Hezbollah, and it is the annual anniversary of every martyr from amongst our martyrs, from the Sayyid of the martyrs, Abbas al-Musawi, and his wife, Yasir, and his son, Hussein, in addition to the Sheikh of the Shuhada, or the martyrs, Sheikh Raghib Harab, the commander of the martyrs, the martyr Imad Bughniyye, all of our martyrs, men, women, clerics, the children of clerics, commanders, the children of the commanders, and the mujahideen, and the leaders who are still stepping forward. And many are joining, many of our beloved, many of our martyrs are joining this group. On Martyr Day, what we must first speak about are the martyrs. We say to the martyrs, and we say also to the people, we reveal, we express our real feelings, our understanding, our culture, our knowledge. We are those who stayed alive. We bless, we congratulate these martyrs. Why? First of all, because they have been freed from the prison of this world which will cease to exist, and they have headed towards the eternal, immortal life, to immortal paradise, from prison to that other kind of life, to being with God, whereby dignity and honor and peace and reassurance and security and happiness, and where we see something which nobody has ever seen, which nobody has ever heard, nobody can ever even imagine. Nothing, no language, nothing can express this afterlife. And because by their martyrdom, their life has become stronger. There is where we have real life. There is where we can say there is indeed life. But regarding life here, it's nothing. Life in this world. Second, we thank them. We thank them for everything they sacrifice for our sake and for the sake of the people and for the sake of the Ummah and the sanctities and for the sake of the past, present and future. We, thanks to God, in this resistance and in this march, we know this blessing, we recognize the blessing, and we thank those who gave us the blessing. And Allah God is the one who grants blessings before anyone else, and he also enabled some of his creations to grant blessings to the people. We owe it to those people. This is an honor. And of course, by expressing thanks, the good will continue. If you continue to thank, I will increase my blessings. So based upon this, we must always remember and always recall what those martyrs sacrificed for the sake of our people and our ummah and our generations and our future. Some people, unfortunately, they've reached the level whereby they say that you say we owe it to you. No, we all owe it to the martyrs, and we must remember what they sacrificed for our sake, what they sacrificed for us, in order to realize the blessings that result from their martyrdom and their wounding. And we thank them. We thank them for this. For example, when we speak about the era of victories, the victories are a result, a blessing of this cleansed blood of these martyrs. Of course, all the martyrs, I'm not speaking only about Hezbollah's martyrs, the martyrs of all of the resistance factions, the martyrs of the Lebanese army, the Lebanese resistance factions and Palestinian resistance factions in Lebanon, the martyrs of the Lebanese and Syrian army over decades in Lebanon. However, as a result of those who are wounded, as a result of the Mujahideen, but what distinguishes the martyrs is that they sacrificed everything. Existence is the most anyone can sacrifice for his God and for his people and for his ummah, for his cause, is what those martyrs sacrificed. So as a result, these are their victories. What we witnessed are their victories, their achievements. We are living in light of these achievements. When we take a look at the foreign developments, when we take a look at the tangible results and the foreign developments, the developments that took place elsewhere, our territories, which were returned to us without any preconditions, without any rewards, after long years of occupation, our prisoners who were liberated from the prisons, the security which our country is enjoying, especially in the south, because of the equation of deterrence in confronting the enemy, and also on the other front in confronting the takfiris, all of the achievements that have taken place up until now are as a result of this blood. Lebanon today is very much immune from the danger, also because of this blood and the sacrifices and the martyrs from the men and of the resistance and the soldiers and generals of the Lebanese army. And what is taking place regarding the dangers facing this region and the people of the region, all the achievements being made are a result of this cleansed blood. And one of the most important achievements of this blood, and this is related to this world, freedom, liberty, dignity, these are all issues related to this world, what we referred to in the verses previously. One of the most important achievements is this spirit which the martyrs ignited, brought to life in our people, the spirit of jihad, resistance, the spirit of martyrdom, honor, dignity, refusing to bow down, refusing to be humiliated, and not just sitting down. The martyrs, they brought this spirit alive in the ummah, this vigilance, this determination. In other words, this reawakening, the awakening of our people, the blood of the martyrs awakened our people and the peoples of our ummah. And the blood, this blood, gave us the guarantee to continue on the path of resistance and to continue on the path of the jihad in order to achieve the remaining goals, liberating territories and sanctities and defeating the Zionist project in the region, and also fulfilling the dream of independence and sovereignty and liberty for our peoples and our governments and our sanctities. This is an achievement and also a blessing of the blood of the martyrs. This change in the family, in the father, the mother, the wife, the children, the surroundings, the neighbors, this would not have taken place just by words or by speeches or via the media. The blood of the martyrs was the biggest factor, the strongest factor, which led to the awakening and strengthening of the will, which hence led to where we have reached today, thank God, whereby we now have strength and capability, an ability to confront the threats and challenges. These are the blessings of the blood of our martyrs. This is our strongest weapon. Since the beginning, this spirit of jihad, this spirit of jihad and martyrdom, this jihadist martyrdom activity is our strongest enemy, strongest weapon in confronting the enemy and its very large military arsenal and the huge, unlimited American support ever since 1982 up until today. If we had waited to get capabilities and quantity and some kind of strategic balance, as they say, with the enemy, then there would not have been resistance. We would have not have witnessed liberation. The enemy would have still been in our territory and would have seized control and exercised hegemony and achieved the goals of that invasion and that occupation. The same goes for Palestine since the beginning. Today, this spirit, it once again, the resistance, the intifada, it is imposing once again the cause of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the sanctities. It's imposing this cause on the whole world. This spirit is imposing it. The government of the enemy can isolate the Palestinian people. It's doing it. It can cut apart, disconnect the Gaza Strip from the West Bank and the West Bank from 1948 territories, and can also disconnect cities inside the West Bank. It also can stop the supply routes, can cut off the supply routes to prevent arms or ammunition or capabilities from reaching the Palestinians in any of the areas. The government of the enemy can also monitor the factions and dismantle the cells and the jihadist networks that are planning for jihadist operations. However, the government of the enemy cannot isolate individuals themselves. The government of the enemy cannot prevent a knife from reaching the hand of a man or woman or a young man or young woman, and the government of the enemy cannot stop this confrontation as long as the Palestinian men and women, the young men and women, have this spirit. What we saw over the past few days on the television, every person should be proud of this. It's also a lesson to be learned by every person, especially the men in this ummah, the men who are sitting down, who are silent, who are abandoning, who are running away from their responsibility. When we see on the television screens, when we see a young Palestinian woman very calmly, with reassurance, very firmly, at the time where she knows her fate, either being killed or being imprisoned for life, but regardless, with all calmness, she takes her knife out of her handbag and stabs a soldier, and when she flees, she heads towards him. However, the film is, the image is cut. This is something which all the men must take a look at. It's also something which we should be proud of. What is it a result of? It's a result of this spirit of genuine spirit of jihad. What is it a result of? It's a result of this spirit of genuine spirit of jihad. This spirit on Martyrs' Day, what I want to say to you, to all those who are present, to all the viewers and listeners, it's our responsibility to preserve this spirit, because for decades they have been working on breaking this spirit, on toppling this spirit, on killing this spirit, on freezing this spirit. And there are wars being waged, wars whereby hundreds of billions of dollars are spent, according to the, what the Americans themselves say, and according to what the tools of the Americans say, wars being waged by the media, by social media, by all available tools. These wars are being waged in order to express doubt and in order to simplify, make fun of and tarnish this resistance. And all of the mujahideen, all the resistance fighters in all resistance movements, to nail this spirit. Because if they succeed in nailing this spirit, what benefit will there be for missiles and unique weapons and ammunition and the huge military arsenals and the quantity? Flesh and bone, without any spirit, without any will. This is what they want to take from us. And we must confront. We must confront these kinds of wars, which have their international and regional and local tools that are working day and night. Our responsibility is to confront, just as it is our responsibility to preserve the arms of resistance, to liberate what remains of the occupied territories and to deter aggression and to be part of the Ummah, which retrieves the sanctities. We must also at the same time preserve the spirit. It's the responsibility of the clerics, the media outlets, the intellectuals, the politicians, the fathers, the mothers, the wives, and the families of the martyrs, the wounded, and everyone. We must take this responsibility. Of course, we are confident that we can preserve this spirit and further develop this spirit. It is strengthening, it is developing, it is spreading, and this proves the failure of all of these wars which have been waged since decades. And this unique qualitative and quantitative development in the resistance, men, women, young, elderly, especially amongst the young men and women. It's another kind of victory for the resistance against the most dangerous forms of war being waged against us. This continuation, this development in the movement of resistance is also one of the achievements and a blessing of the blood of the martyrs. The blood of the martyrs today is still pushing us forward, bringing us to the front lines, making us raise our fists and our arms and raise our voices against the occupation and the injustice and the projects to seize control of this Ummah. One of the most important factors related to the spirit is represented by the families of the martyrs. They have this name, they have this label, and they join this group when they sacrifice one of their beloved as a martyr in the cause of God, be it a son, a brother, a father, a husband, a wife, a sister, a daughter, etc. The families of the martyrs today, they are the fruits of the blood of the martyrs. This unique status which we find amongst the families of the martyrs, this humane, these high ethics, these are also a result of the blood of the martyrs, which have an impact on the father, mother, the brothers, the sisters, the husband, wife, the surroundings. When we take a look at the families of the martyrs, let's look at one of the achievements. What do we see when we look at the families of the martyrs? We were listening before, and I also heard this yesterday, and I read the whole thing. What do we find when we look at the families of the martyrs, those who are now amongst us in these Husseiniyas and these gatherings? What we see from them only is firmness, patience, satisfaction with what God has chosen. We find that they also thank God for what He chose for them, pride, being proud of their martyrs and being proud of what their martyrs sacrificed, determination to continue on the path and readiness to give more, to sacrifice more, readiness. The Americans and the Zionists and their tools in the region and many of the enemies and the rivals imagine that when we inform someone of a martyr or when the families receive the body of the martyrs, they imagine that Hezbollah confronts a big problem. But I'd like to tell you what we see from the families of the martyrs, from their fathers, their mothers. They say to the brothers who give them the news, they say, this is our martyr, this is our source of pride. We thank God for what God has chosen for us, and our other children are here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 children remain. And some indeed, when we have families who have sacrificed 2 or 3 or 4 martyrs, this reflects the honesty of what they say. This is not just for the sake of saying. And what you heard just recently from the fathers of the martyrs, it expresses what they really believe in. They are honest in every single letter and word they say. This is what we see from the fathers and the mothers of the martyrs and the families of the martyrs. And this is a blessing of the blood of those martyrs. So therefore, when we have in our ummah and in our country such martyrs, and when we have such honorable families who are standing with patience, we should not be afraid. Whether it be from a challenge or from a threat, we shouldn't be worried about the future, because we have this strength. The true source of strength is this. Then we have expertise, experience, weapons, capabilities in order to further enhance our capabilities in this battle. As long as we are alive, as long as we have those men who are alive and lived up to the pledge to God, some of them have sacrificed and their life has been strengthened, and some who await. And when we listen to these words from them, when we hear these stances from them, then this makes us more determined, more firm, more present, and more confident in the future. Confident in the future. They want our people, our peoples, and our ummah to reach a state of despair. Even if we are despair, even when we reach the state of despair, we abandon our causes, we abandon our responsibilities, we run away in the seas. We run away to places where God doesn't want us to go, or where we will all be lost. But as long as this life remains, as long as the status remains, we must not allow desperation to infiltrate us. Now, that's what I wanted to say in the first segment. And actually, we, as a result of this blessed march, we can see God's promise. Our martyrs have been rewarded in the aftermath, and they wait to receive the greatest reward in Judgment Day. And we also enjoy what we're seeing now in this world: dignity, honor, a sense of strength, a capability to confront challenges, security, reassurance. Regarding the general situation, I'll say a few words. First of all, regarding Netanyahu's visit to the White House, after a deep disagreement and after 1 year passed since his last visit, I have two comments. The first is that there is a firm American stance in support of Israel and complete American commitment to Israel's security and its interests and its upper hand against all Arab governments and peoples. The Americans are not ashamed of this. They don't care about anyone, be it their allies or their friends, if you can consider them allies or friends. And we also witnessed more American covering or justification for what Netanyahu is doing in occupied Palestine, the killings, the oppression, and the aggression. And we also saw support for Israel's right to defend itself. Against whom? Against unarmed, oppressed people whose land is occupied, who are subject to isolation. This is America. We must draw attention to this in order to tell all our peoples, or tell all those who pin their hopes on America, this is America. When it comes to Israel, there's no joking. When it comes to Israel, there is no personal rivalry. Obama and Netanyahu, if they become angry with each other or curse each other, this is something personal. But when it comes to Israel, there's nothing like the Republican or Democrat. Regarding Israel, America supports Israel completely. The second comment is that the White House announced that one of the issues which it wanted to discuss, which Obama wanted to discuss with Netanyahu, was Hezbollah. Now, well, they didn't say what was discussed or what results were reached. However, I'd also like to comment on this and say, yes, for us, that's good news. We are proud. We are proud of this. When the great Satan and its tools, its main tool in the region, Israel, when they sit down and look at the region and consider that there are some places which pose a problem for them, which threaten their project, which stands as an obstacle preventing their hegemony and their occupation and their aggression. One of these problems is Hezbollah. So therefore, they want to sit down and see how should they deal with Hezbollah. And so on Martyrs Day, I consider that this is a new testimony for our martyrs and for Hezbollah and everyone standing with us that we are on the right side. We are on the right side. We are taking the right stance. Because when the day comes whereby America speaks highly of us, and speaks of us in a good way, we should realize that we are on the wrong side. We are taking the wrong stance. It means we have done something wrong. However, when those who occupy our territories and those who attack our sanctities and our ummah, the enemy who is planning at the highest level, this means that we are on the right side, first of all, and it also means that we are having a big impact on the equations of the region. Otherwise, if we have a marginal impact, then there would have been no need for their precious time to be taken to discuss the issue of Hezbollah. So this is also something which proves our right stance. Now, what steps could they take? A military war on Lebanon? That's a scenario that always exists, but we think this is a very remote possibility because of the price Israel would pay. Israel knows this because of the equation of deterrence in Lebanon. Yes, they will continue to target us security-wise and also to tarnish our image, more soft war, more media efforts, more misleading, more accusations, the issue of drugs and mafias and money laundering. You're going to hear a lot of such accusations, and also economic pressures on everyone whom they believe, and even those whom they don't believe, could have an impact or could help in the economic and financial structure for the support of the resistance. They would use sanctions and blacklist and prevent these people from business deals. But they have done all of this. There's nothing new. They've killed our leaders, Sayyid Abbas, Sheikh Raghib, Haj Imad. These were all assassinations, be it public or covert assassinations. Soft war has been ongoing for tens of years. How many lies have been spread for many years? Economic pressures and economic and financial isolation. Nothing has changed, and this won't change anything at all. However, this requires from us to be vigilant and to take responsibility and to be cautious. And also, this requires from those in Lebanon and outside Lebanon, this requires from those inside Lebanon, outside Lebanon, not to be partners of Obama and Netanyahu. Two lines under Netanyahu. Some have no problem when it comes to Obama, but for them not to be partners with Obama and Netanyahu in targeting this resistance and its will and its presence and its impact. Netanyahu in targeting this resistance and its will and its presence and its impact. Second, regarding the region, especially in Syria and Yemen, day by day it is becoming clearer to the opposing camp, to America and its allies and its tools, be it countries or armed groups, that the opposing camp isn't able to decide the victory in its favor. Whatever be the delay in the political solution in Yemen and Syria, the battle will not be decided for their interest, in their favor. The steadfastness on the ground, on the battlefield, proves this. The same goes to Iraq. What happened yesterday in Aleppo, be it in the southern countryside and the large advances made and the big losses inflicted on the armed groups, or regarding the siege lifted on the Kuwaitis airport after 3 years of isolation, this is very significant. Because if you look, there are a number of Syrian army generals and soldiers, 200, 300, I don't remember the exact number. They have been isolated for 3 years, 360 degrees of besiegement by ISIS. Suicide operations, car bombs, ongoing shelling. However, they stood firmly in this position until yesterday. There was success in lifting this siege. This is very significant. Before we refer to the military achievement, it reflects the will, the fighting spirit, the steadfastness, the firmness from those generals and soldiers. It's a message sent especially to those who want to always give the impression in Vienna or elsewhere that the Syrian army is in a state of collapse, is inefficient, is not present, and that those who are fighting on behalf of the Syrian army are this side or that side. That's not true. This message is clear. The Syrian generals and soldiers in the Syrian army have this level of determination and firmness to stay and stand firm in an airport subject, a military base or military airport subject to shelling for 3 years. And in the end, the brothers are telling me 2 years. Some media outlets are saying 3 years. Okay, 2 years. Is 2 years a short period? A complete siege. This reflects the will of firmness and steadfastness. And this unique operation, which was carried out walking in confronting the ambushes on the front lines against ISIS, walking for tens of kilometers in order to reach Kuwaitis, this also reflects a will and determination which the attacking forces had. Anyway, these battlefield developments are also a message to America and its tools and its allies and its friends. This message is that you must abandon the military option and really take a serious approach to the political solution, a realistic political solution, without impossible preconditions and without arrogant preconditions, be it in Syria or Yemen or anywhere else. Regarding the situation in Lebanon, it's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate, the situation which we have reached in Lebanon. I don't want to express sorrow. We see a state of running away from responsibility. We see that some are waiting for foreign sides. If you watch television, if you read the newspapers, what do you see? Solutions? Or is it that people are cursing each other or accusing one another? That's what we see. Cursing and accusing, generally speaking, exchanging accusations. What is most dangerous, what is more dangerous, and what is even worse, is that the country is so fragile, the state, the country, the society. Let me be frank here. This Lebanese society, not just the state, some say the state is weak. The state is fragile. I'd like to say also the fragility of society, unfortunately. When we disagree on one issue, even if it's not an issue that could decide the fate of Lebanon, you find that the country is on the verge of collapse. You find that society, the structure of society, is about to collapse. And so hence you see in the analysis, they quickly say that the alliances have collapsed and these people like each other, now they're cursing each other. What does it mean? It doesn't mean that the state is fragile. It also means we have a fragile society. Now, in all issues, even when we refer to the constitution, each side explains the issue according to his own mood, according to his own preference. This is the last comments because it concerns everyone. Over the past few days, they were difficult days. However, God willing, there is something good which I'll refer to. Now, after a long absence, there is now a call to hold a legislative session because there are some urgent issues which cannot be further delayed. And the country entered into discussion, different points of view. Some said that the parliament, of course, we respect all. Some said we respect all opinions. Some said that the parliament cannot issue legislation with the absence of a president. The mere meeting of the parliament is unconstitutional without the presence of a president. That's one opinion. The other opinion says that it's not natural, it's not normal for the parliament to meet with the absence of a president. The president should be present. However, if the meeting is for the sake of rebuilding the leadership or for the sake of addressing very urgent matters, there's no problem as a unique measure. That's another opinion which some support. The third opinion says that whether we have a president or not, the parliament is an independent branch and it represents the people. It has the right to discuss any issue. So who is right? Who explains the constitution? We stay in a state of disagreement, and it's not an issue differences of opinion or an academic discussion. Of course, each opinion brings with it a certain stance, boycotting or attending. Now, we have another discussion which we've heard over the past few years, and I'm describing the situation here. If the parliament should meet, let's assume that the parliament has the right to issue legislations. However, we also have opinions. One opinion says that there is no such constitutional right, and therefore, if the 50% plus one of parliamentarians meet, they can vote for the legislations they want, or two-thirds. However, 50% plus one, whoever is present and whoever is absent, even if a sect itself is absent, there's no problem. Now, some people are of that opinion. There is a second opinion which speaks about the constitutionality, which says that the constitution requires diverse presence. If a certain component of the country is absent, then the session does not enjoy constitutionality. Now, over the past few days, there is something new being raised. How is it? How do we say that a political component is absent? If all the parliamentarians from this political faction is absent, does it mean it's absent? But if some members of the faction are present and some are not, what percentage of representation or presence means that this component or faction is there? If there is a high number present, however, they don't represent all of the main political factions in this sect, does it mean that it's constitutional or not? There are also different opinions here. Who decides all of these matters? God only knows. So we are stuck in this country. Even when we ask who explains, some people say it's the president who decides these matters. I don't know how true it is, how constitutional it is. Some say the parliament explains the constitution, but the parliament, in order to meet, we need to explain the constitution, and the parliament is required to explain it. So issues are stuck with each other. Some say the constitutional committee has the right, doesn't have the right. In the end, we are a country which is stuck now with each other. Some say the constitutional committee has the right, doesn't have the right. In the end, we our country, which is stuck now. We find, when we look at our political crises and our non-political crises, that there is a real problem, a big problem. There's vacuum somewhere here. There's vacuum which must be filled. We cannot wait for a conference or amending the Taif agreement in a certain place. If there is, it's present theoretically, we must agree on explaining. A country cannot be run if we don't reach, if there is a certain side which decides, be it a constitutional body, a legal body, or a body of experts, or a body of leaders. A country without a certain side which decides the disagreements, such a country cannot continue to exist and remain alive, and it will go from problem to problem and from crisis to crisis. Now, regarding the current situation, the session which will be held tomorrow, we from the beginning, we called for staying away from media arguments on the media, because we must reach a solution. Let's go to a real dialogue, real discussion, because in the end, what is better for the country is that we all be present in the legislative session. I can say to all of you, because I saw it now on the breaking news, and my information before I entered the studio was that we were on the verge of agreement. Now, what they just told me right now is that General Aoun has announced on behalf of the Reform and Change Bloc that they will participate in the legislative session. This means that, praise be to God, I thank all those who pursued, who exerted the efforts and cooperated and made concessions. I thank all those who pursued efforts and took an appropriate stance and dealt in a responsible national way. We hope that the parliamentary session will be held tomorrow. It's a natural interest for us. Regarding us, there is no special interest for our party specifically. Based upon this experience, based upon everything we have reached now, I'd like to say what I call for in the end. Look, my colleagues, it seems that this piecemeal approach isn't appropriate. Everything is complicated. You saw the garbage crisis. Now we're approaching winter and there are storms expected, so God only knows what could happen. There is no possibility for a solution. Let the Lebanese government and the Lebanese state, in addition to the political factions and the Lebanese people, don't just pin the blame on the political factions, the Lebanese people, the municipalities, the parties. The Lebanese must all stand together without anyone accusing the other and blaming the other. Do you want to be more fair than that? Let us all stand and say, we, the Lebanese, the government, the people, the parties, the state, we all failed. We didn't succeed in solving the garbage crisis. There are many problems now in the country. The wages, the strikes of employees, the teachers, the kidnapped military soldiers, those who were kidnapped by the terrorist groups, those who have been forgotten, those who have died where they tried to migrate by sea. We have a real problem, and we have presidential vacuum. We have a cabinet which is not functioning, a parliament which I hope we'll hold a session, we'll have at least one institution that is still working to open the door for other institutions to function. So we have a real problem. Now, how to address this issue? This is what I want to ask. A piecemeal approach is very tiring and usually doesn't lead to any result. What I call for on the Martyrs' Day of Hezbollah, and as a blessing to the blood of those people whose voice we must listen to, I call for a comprehensive political settlement at the level of the country, for all people to sit down bilaterally, three-way meetings, four-way meetings, to discuss all issues at once. The presidential issue, nobody should tomorrow come and say that we're abandoning. No. Discussing the settlement might mean that this is our candidate for the presidency. We insist on his candidacy. However, we open the door to accept this candidate. What do you want? Or the opposing side must behave in the same way. This presidential issue the future government, the future prime minister, the structure of the government, the parliament, its functioning, the electoral law, because the electoral law, my dear brothers and sisters, my fellow Lebanese, is different than any other provision which could be discussed in the parliament. The electoral law is the main issue in rebuilding leadership. Electoral law means the fate of the country. The electoral law means who will you turn your fate and your existence and your future and your sovereignty and your freedom and your independence to. This is not a marginal or simple issue which could be subject to pressures. It requires a real discussion. We have no problem. We, as one of the components, we say we are ready. Let's come together, discuss the main issues, not the marginal issues. Let's discuss, put all the main issues in one basket and reach a settlement. When I say settlement, it means we must give and take for the sake of the country and for the interests of the country. Let's not wait for anything from the foreign side. The foreign powers are preoccupied elsewhere. And let's not also wait for something to take place inside the country. I sometimes read some articles and analysis which say that some are awaiting for a new May 7 or something similar to that. That's a mistake. That's a wrong way of thinking. I remind you, May 7 events were not for the sake of reconstituting leadership or for the sake of a Doha conference. It was a reaction to May 5 and in defense of the arms of resistance. That was its goal. However, the result was a Doha conference. However, today, if anyone brought about or ignited events of May 7, nobody in the Arab world can come and put the people on an airplane and bring them to Cairo or Riyadh or Doha or Baghdad or Damascus or elsewhere in the Arab world. And there are some places we don't go, there are some places they don't go. So forget this waste of time, forget exhausting the people and the health of the people. The real political factions in Lebanon are called upon. Now, the same dialogue which Speaker Birri is sponsoring in the parliament in another way, we don't know. But let's look for a real political settlement. This is the exit. If you want to continue with this piecemeal approach, addressing issue after issue, it's not clear if we'll be able to solve our problems. Anyway, we in the resistance in Hezbollah, we shall continue in taking our responsibilities side by side with our nationalist army and our people, be it in the south, to defend our country and to push away the dangers and confront the Zionist enemy, or on the eastern borders to defend our nation and our people and to confront the Takfir project. And inside the country, we will pursue our efforts as much as we can regarding this issue, which requires the cooperation and honesty and loyalty and partnership of everyone to build a state worthy at the level of the sacrifices of those great martyrs. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Hezbollah Secretary General there, live from Beirut. This is the occasion of Martyrs' Day. It's just why he came and made that speech at the Al-Sayyid Al-Shuhada complex. He talked about many things. I'm going to highlight what he said about the recent visit of the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to the White House. He said that completely displayed how the U.S. is committed to Israel and that the U.S. Is going to continue with this commitment, and also showed the upper hand against its Arab allies that the U.S. has exercised with this show of closeness to Israel, that obviously goes unabated based on this visit. He said that the Americans are covering up for Israel in terms of what's going on in the occupied territories. In Yemen, he said the opposing camp is not winning. The same goes for Iraq. He talked about the gains that have happened there on the ground, both in Syria and Iraq. And he said that the military achievements are very important, especially the one that happened after 3 years of isolation by the ISIL terrorists, that this area was freed. He also went at length talking about how the resistance continues to be very successful against wars, and in particular against Israel, of course, saying that the martyrs are owed for this resistance.